got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 160. Today the amateur traveler goes to India and talks about traveling to India as a woman. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is an amazing story that sounds like it's something right out of a movie. A pilot in England had a stroke while flying his Cessna and was struck blind. And somehow, a Royal Air Force pilot was able to fly up next to him and talk him into a controlled landing, and he landed safely. Just an amazing story. The second one, this sounds like something that probably won't be the next Disney commercial. You've just hijacked a bus. What are you going to do next? If you're like someone last week, you're going to go to Downtown Disney. A man took a tour bus driver hostage briefly and forced her to drive to Downtown Disney in Orlando. Sometimes you just have a craving to see the mouse. And then finally, what has two sides, one dark, one light, and holds the universe together? No, not the Force, but duct tape. And that's in fact what an airline crew used last week to restrain an unruly passenger who started fighting with flight attendants and grabbing other passengers. For links to those stories, as well as one about the alarming pace at which air travel is declining, check out the links in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Beth Whitman, who's come to talk to us about a new book that she's just written, Wanderlust and Lipstick, for women traveling to India. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
You've written a book on India. What drew you to India originally?
Well, I had actually been to India about 20 years ago. I spent a couple of months there and also in Nepal, and I was a real backpacker at that point with very little money and very little rupees in my pocket. And they say that when you go to India, you either love it or you hate it. And I ended up leaving feeling very neutral. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't a place that I felt like was really going to draw me back there. Fast forward about 18 years, and here I am in Seattle. And we like to think of ourselves as a technology hub here, and a lot of Indians are working in the area. So I have a lot of Indian friends, and they've all been telling me over the years, oh, you've got to go to India, you have to go back. And many of them have moved back and invited myself and my partner, John, over there. And so we said, let's take them up on their offer. And that was the real reason that I went back for a second time. And I did end up just absolutely loving it. And I think part of it was that I had a little bit more money in my pocket, so I was able to enjoy it just a little bit more. And the fact that I knew people there, I was drawn back for that particular reason, but I did love it. I loved the people, I loved the food, I loved the sights and all of the excitement of it. And after that trip, I really wanted to share that enthusiasm with other women and wanted to write the book, but I knew that I had to go back yet another time, you know, to do research, strictly to do research. And so I went back for a month and I traveled there on my own. And again, just feel so lulled and so enticed to continue traveling there.
And your book, which I had read and very much enjoyed, despite the fact that I am not a woman, and really most of the book doesn't have to do specifically with women, but you obviously bring up some issues that I think are pertinent to women in particular. Before we get into those, though, I don't want to scare people off. I want people to fall in love with India before they worry about it. So if I say India to you, and you picture India in your mind, what do you picture? What is the most memorable scene you have of your trips?
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you ask that, because really the first thing that comes up is the Taj Mahal, and it's so cliche. However, I have to say that I've traveled all over the world, and I've been traveling for 20-something years, But that is the first place that I've ever seen that literally took my breath away. Hmm. You can't imagine walking around a corner and there is the Taj Mahal in all its complete splendor. It really is a breathtaking experience. And my first trip there 20 years ago, I didn't go to see it. I went all the way to India and never saw the Taj. And I saw it for the first time about a year and a half ago and just was amazed by it. It really is gorgeous. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But all these images and smells and mm-hmm. visuals do come to mind. And it's the food and it's the people and it's the colorful saris that the women wear, just a bombardment that my brain just starts flashing, you know, with all of these images. It's just really gorgeous.
And from your trips to India, the best day you remember?
Oh, the best day. I was in a little town in Rajasthan, mm-hmm. which is a state in the western part of the country, a little town called Udaipur. When you travel, I'm sure you know this, that it's so much about the people that you meet.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
on this one day in this beautiful little lakeside village, I met a gentleman by the name of Akand, who was a palm reader slash astrologer slash driver. You could hire him out for the day and he would drive you out into the countryside. So myself and a small group of people, we hired him for the day. And he took us out into the countryside, and we went to some temples. And that was just such a special day because we had a personal guide who told us all about India, who really led us into his life, brought us to a wonderful restaurant where we had some very authentic food, and he read our palms, you know, just as part of the day's events. And that day stands out to me as really one of the most special experiences that I've ever had in India because it encapsulates everything that India is about. It's the food and the people and the wonderful sights that you get to see. It's just really wonderful.
What was your biggest surprise the first time you went to India?
Oh, my biggest surprise. Well, when I first went to India, it was pretty much the first time I'd been out of the country, out of the United States.
That's really so diving in the deep end. Okay.
Isn't that crazy? So there was a lot of culture shock going mm-hmm. on there. It was the amount of pollution mm-hmm. and the dust and the dirt and the number of people that it just seemed like to me that every square inch of the country was filled with a person, you know, with a
sure.
body. Now that I have a lot more travel under my belt, just really second nature, and that's the way people live. They live in the streets, and I don't mean that literally, but everything takes place in the streets. They mm-hmm. sell food in the streets. Their families hang out in the street. Just so much of the activity is outside, and that just is really natural and really wonderful to me. We're so isolated here in mm-hmm. North America.
Sure.
But that really struck me early on.
And as you wanted to write the book and prepare people for what they would encounter that would bring them out of their comfort zone, what are the sort of the top three things that you can think of that you wanted to prepare people with?
I want to speak specifically to the female aspect
sure.
of it, because I think that is so important. The number one thing that I think that women don't realize, and men to a certain degree too, is that India is a very socially conservative country. And mm-hmm. even though you've got Bollywood women who are wearing beautiful, skimpy outfits and they're seemingly bearing it all, that is really frowned upon. And a woman who thinks that she can go to India and dress skimpily, even in 90-degree weather, is going to be treated literally like a prostitute. I mean, that's mm-hmm. how women would be viewed, unless it's a very touristy area. Because they're just not used to that. They're not used to seeing elbows and bare shoulders and knees. So you do need to cover up. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, to actually be respected mm-hmm. once you're there. I think the other thing, too, is just to understand the culture. Read guidebooks. Read Traveler's Tales. Has wonderful compilation books about India where you can read other people's stories. And I think that's a really important component to understanding the culture so that you know what you're getting into beforehand and just researching as much as you can. I think there's really two key factors, and that's as a woman dressing appropriately and knowing how to behave, whether you're a man or a woman, just being respectful of the culture and really kind of understanding the level of poverty and the culture in general so that you're not in such culture shock like I was on that first trip.
What would you recommend for a first-timer who's visiting India? What should they do if they had, say, 2 weeks for such a diverse and huge country? And I know that's not enough time, but...
Well, I think I did myself a disservice by not going to see the Taj Mahal on my first trip.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it is such a popular destination and it is so touristy, I think that concentrating your time in that specific area, they call it the Golden Triangle, and
mm-hmm.
that's Delhi, Agra, where the Taj Mahal is, and Rajasthan. And by staying kind of in that particular region, you'll get a really good flavor of numerous different lifestyles, big city life in Delhi with lots of amazing architecture, and then Agra with the Taj Mahal, and Rajasthan, which is still very traditional and very interesting and very steeped in a lot of history there as well. And I think with such a short period of time, just a couple of weeks, I think that's really probably the best thing to do. Of course, if you're interested in yoga or you're interested in specific spices or interested in tea, then you'd want to look at other parts of the country and kind of focus on
mm-hmm.
that. But I think for a first timer, I think that little Golden Triangle area is a really good starting point.
Okay. And if I want to come back and I want to have more than just postcards of the Taj Mahal, how do I experience India? What should I do? What should I try? What should I taste?
Wow. You know what? I think the answer to that is to determine what your interest is.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You'll get so much more out of the trip by doing that. So if you enjoy music, then concentrate on an area. Maybe it's a couple of big cities. Maybe it's Bangalore and Delhi and Calcutta or Mumbai, where you can go and really experience some theatrical performances or
mm-hmm.
some musical performances. And as I'd mentioned earlier, if you enjoy tea, you might want to go to Darjeeling up in the north, the northeast, and then head down to Kerala, which is a beautiful, beautiful beach area down in the south part of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did an episode on Kerala just recently.
Oh, it's just amazing. It's such a beautiful place. I think because India is so big, and it's so diverse, I think you'll enjoy it most if you choose to kind of follow what you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a hobby or a particular area of interest and kind of hone in on that and then build your trip around that, you'll get a lot more out of it.
Okay. So I should look for the India podcasters get together or something like that.
You should.
Sounds good.
You could probably couch surf your way through the country and meet all sorts of podcasters.
Well, and obviously English being widespread in India may make that more possible than in some other areas in that
continent,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what did you do then?
Well, what did I do? I bought silver jewelry.
Okay.
Because I don't necessarily like expensive jewelry, but I do like to bring home souvenirs. So one of my goals was to find silver jewelry. And Rajasthan is really the only area where they have that. So I brought back lots of jewels. You know, I live in Seattle, and it's so miserable here for so much of the year that when I travel to India in January, I want to go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent some time in Kerala enjoying that. And brought up tea earlier because I love tea, and I went up to Darjeeling and bought some of the most amazing tea that you can find literally anywhere in the world. I bought these little bags of tea for just a couple of dollars, and this is the tea that gets wrapped up with the Harrods basket.
One of the chapters that you have in the book is culture shock. Now, with the shrinking world, isn't India just like here?
You're a comedian. I know you are. Oh my gosh. India is the farthest from any place, I think, in the world, geographically
mm-hmm.
and really literally. It is so different. And the interesting thing is that it is the extremes. It is beautiful, and it is dirty, and it is wealthy, and it's also extremely poor, and it's generous, just over the top, the people, but it's also unscrupulous. Is a good word for that. So it's really hard to kind of grasp, but the more you know about it, the easier travel is to the subcontinent, that's for sure. But it really is, it's the extremes, and it's just so different from anything that we could ever imagine.
I've asked a couple times for people who've done around the world trips, when did you feel furthest from home? And a couple times I've gotten the answer, India. So you're not the only one who has described it that way, as feeling somehow, though not geographically for some of us, the far side of the earth. And yet, at times, so similar. I mean, you can get by in the language, and for those of us in Silicon Valley or Seattle, we relate to people from India all the time. So what kind of things am I not prepared for?
The sheer number of people that are there, I think that's one of the most difficult things to get used to. From the moment that you get off plane and you're at the airport, there are thousands of people outside of the airport waiting for their family members. It's a big event, you know, when someone arrives on a plane. So you step out and you're bombarded with the heat and the dust. And then you've got all of these people that are just surrounding you. And, you know, a lot of those thousand people want your business. They want you to take their taxi. They want to sell you something. And it can be really overwhelming. In some ways, you kind of have to shut down, and you learn to pretty quickly that you can't just be kind and gently brush off everyone all the time. You just have to kind of keep focused and just keep moving forward so that it doesn't all completely consume you.
Okay. So we're putting on our kind of Manhattan, New Yorker, brusque attitude somewhat as a protective shell.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? As a traveler, that's really hard to do, because we travel because we want to be open and we want to experience things. So it's completely counterintuitive. We arrive and we want to be friendly and we want to be open. And then we realize, and generally it might take days or it might take weeks. And then you just start getting kind of ticked off at people. But if you can have that kind of protective shell, like you said, it certainly helps, and women even more so, because you will garner the attention of men and women, because women will be really interested in you as well. They really want to talk to you and learn about your home life and your family. And the men will be interested in you perhaps in a sexual way too. So you do have to have that protective shell up.
Anything else, any precautions, warnings you would give?
Not necessarily warnings, but there are a lot of precautions. I have tons of tips in the book about that as well. And it's a lot of really little things. India is not a violent country. I mean, you might hear about it in terms of sectarian violence, but generally travelers are not the victims of any sort of violent behavior from the locals. But there are a lot of opportunistic thieves. And if they see your backpack left unattended or your camera, your sunglasses, they'll swipe it. There'll usually be someone around who's more than happy to take it off your hands. So it's really about being vigilant and being aware of your personal belongings, carrying a cable lock and locking your bags down if you're taking an overnight train, locking your zippers together so that someone can't just open up your day bag or open up your luggage and snatch the contents out of it. And it's just a lot of little tricks like that that I think are particularly helpful.
And where would you recommend in terms of staying? You said you enjoyed it more when you didn't stay in the backpackers' hostel. So where should we stay then?
Well,
I think you've got me on some podcaster's couch, I believe, is the recommendation that I got.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are all sorts of options. And India is an extremely cheap place to travel. And on that first trip when I was there 20 years ago, I did stay in youth hostels that were probably a couple bucks a night. And the walls are thin and people are coming and going and you're sharing a bathroom. When you're in India, you do really need some downtime, some alone time, quiet time. And splurging and spending 10 bucks for a hotel, I mean, that's a splurge. You're going to get a nice mid-range hotel for that with a private bathroom and really kind of a quiet room. And that's really all it takes. And there are lots of those. Many of them are family run. I stayed with a Servas host, similar to couch surfing, that I did stay with a Servos host when I was in Sarnath, very close to Varanasi, and I stayed with a lovely woman. It ended up that she was German and her husband was Indian, but I stayed in a lovely place there, and I got to meet the family and have a wonderful breakfast cooked for me each morning. So there are ways to stay with families, do the couch surfing or the global freeloaders thing, and stay very inexpensively and meet some great locals at the same time, and that's what I really recommend to folks.
And in terms of locals, you mentioned at least one so far, memorable people you've met. Who's the most memorable? You mentioned at least one person in the book who seemed a bit of a lovable scoundrel, as I recall.
Oh, I don't know about scoundrel, but I think Akand, the palm reader, astrologer, driver, was wonderful. He was definitely not a scoundrel. He was just the most delightful human being I think I've ever met. I took an overnight train from Varanasi to a little place up in the northeast called Siliguri. And I was the only one in my little area. So there were four berths, and I was the only one that was occupying this one area. And a woman and her husband were staying nearby. And the woman came over and chatted with me for hours. And she told me all about India and about the spices that they grow, all the fields that we were seeing outside the window. And that was really memorable to me because she really took the time out to tell me about her country and to let me get to know her. And she also gave me my space, you know, when I wanted it. So I could read and just kind of have some quiet time as well.
And we talked about why someone should go to India, and we said that for a woman it's going to be a little more possibly challenging. Why should a woman? You traveled alone through India. What are you, nuts?
Yeah, actually I am, but not for that reason. It is a little bit more challenging, and it's because of the amount of tension that I think is given to women more so than men. The women, the Indian women, were very interested in touching my skin and feeling my blonde hair and looking at my blue eyes. I really stood out to those folks. And the men were interested in me as well. There was one proprietor of an internet cafe that tried to kiss me in Varanasi. I'd be followed around, and not in any kind of a threatening manner, but I could just tell that I was being followed around. I think if I was a single man, that wouldn't have been the case. If I was just walking around as a male, that wouldn't necessarily happen. So I think women get it from both sides. They get Indian women interested in them and Indian men. And if it's a, let's just say it's American male or a foreign male traveling through India, yeah, the taxi drivers and the cyclo drivers will kind of hassle you, but women won't bother you and men aren't going to be interested in you necessarily sexually.
Right.
Maybe, but probably not.
But when you came back, you didn't say, boy, I'm going to tell all my friends not go to India. In fact, you said, I want to write a guidebook that gets women on their own quite often over to India. So why?
Because it's an amazing country. And I think that when people travel, oftentimes, and it doesn't matter whether it's to Costa Rica or it's to India or Japan or Italy, they like to come back and they like to tell the war stories. That's what everybody wants to hear. You know, weren't the Italian men so aggressive and didn't they follow you around?
And then, of course, it's very disappointing if you have to say, no, they didn't. So
people like to hear the bad stuff. And I think that's what happens with India. India gets a bad rap as a result. And I really wanted to present it in a much more positive manner. I wanted people to, and women in particular, to say, yeah, you know what? I can do that. This is very doable. And kind of give them the encouragement and the inspiration to think of their own journey there. Because it is very possible and it's very rewarding. It's amazingly rewarding and it just shouldn't be missed.
What's one picture you have from your trip up in your house or apartment that's there because it brings you back to India every time you look at it?
Well, it's the Taj Mahal. It is. I have, I think, probably three different photos in various parts of my house.
Interesting.
And that's exactly what brings me back. I blog about India a lot, and I go back to pictures of the people, basically, and I talk about the people that I met. But it's the Taj that brings me back immediately.
Now, when we talk about the Taj Mahal, we're talking about a Muslim monument in a mostly Hindu country. Do they look at it differently than we do, or?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the Indians are just as much in awe of it as anyone else.
as sort of a love story or...
Yeah. I think a lot of people forget about that aspect of it.
Really?
Yeah, that it was built in honor of the Mumtaz, the woman who had died, and her husband created this incredible monument to her. And I think people forget that part of it.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's so many other aspects to it that, I mean, in a way, it's almost easy to forget that because it is bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe that's the whole point. Maybe I'm the only one who forgets that.
As we start to wind this down, just for time reasons, what's one thing you would pack in a woman's bag to take to India?
One thing would be a shawl. You could actually purchase it when you get there. That's what I'd recommend. I'll give you a little tangent here. I haven't checked a piece of luggage in I don't know how long. When I go to a destination, so I have a little 22-inch rollerboard. It's convertible rollerboard and backpack, and I just put that in the luggage bin. And I literally bring the clothes on my back, one shirt, and then I go shopping when I get to India. And one of the things that I do, one of the first things that I purchase is a new shawl, and that's to wrap up. If I am in a tank top and I'm in a touristy area, that might be okay on a hot day. In the evening, it's going to get cooler, and if I'm in a less touristy area, all I have to do is throw that shawl over my shoulders, and it's perfectly fine, and that's what every Indian woman is wearing anyway, so you tend to blend in a little bit better. So, you know, I've always said, as long as you have your passport, and now it's your e-ticket confirmation, that's all you need. Doesn't matter where you're going. And debit card or something, so you've got access to your money, and that's all you need.
Well, besides your book, Wanderlust and Lipstick for Women Traveling to India, what other resources would you recommend for somebody planning a trip?
Well, there are a lot of guidebooks out there, and I have to admit that I'm a Lonely Planet and a Rough Guide gal. I think those folks really have India nailed. But that style might not be for another person, so I'd say go to a bookstore, go to a library, and check out what is more along your style. And then read books that take place in India, whether it's anthologies, short stories written by numerous people. There are just so many great books out there. And just get familiar with the culture through other people's writings.
And to wrap it up, if you had to, and I'm afraid you do, describe India in three words, what three words would you use?
Beautiful.
Okay.
Overwhelming.
Okay.
And, I don't know. Those are the two things that come to mind.
Okay.
And kind of two extremes there, too. And there's nothing in between.
All right. I'll let you get away with two. You owe me one for later on. But
okay.
And again, our guest has been Beth Whitman, and her book is Wanderlust and Lipstick for Women Traveling to India. Beth, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, Chris, thank you very much for the opportunity.
In internet resources today, I have an odd internet resource that I haven't tried, but I'm curious to see if anybody has any experience with it. DiplomaticPassport.com claims that they can help you get a diplomatic passport. Not that they can get it for you, but they can act as an agent for several UN-recognized countries that are apparently selling diplomatic passports. If you know anything about that, I'd be curious to hear what you have heard and whether this is something that's actually worth doing or not. I got an email from Paul that he had problems with the download for show 158, which was Zimbabwe. And I did have some sort of odd problem. I did re-upload the show, and that seemed to fix it, at least for me. So if you have trouble with that show, I would try re-downloading that show. And if you haven't heard that episode, you might listen to JT's advice. JT left a comment on the website, amateurtraveler.com, that said, "Wow, I must say that the latest podcast is the best I've heard on this site. Well, next to the Siberian Nightmare episode or the Year in Europe folks. Well, they're all pretty good. The chemistry, for lack of a better word, between you and your guest was extraordinary. I really, really enjoyed it. I wonder if you can have him back soon." And I had said that I'd been trying to get on Alex for some time because I thought that show was going to turn out well, and I also was very pleased with it. Speaking of things turning out well, I got an email from Stephanie who said, I was hesitant about the latest episode, San Francisco, because I was worried I'd hear the same things I'd already seen, but I decided to listen to check out the pictures. I ended up learning so much more about San Francisco. Now I won't disregard any opportunity to go back because I realize there's a lot more for me to see. Your guest was very insightful and funny too. Thanks, Chris. And again, our guest last week, Richard Miller from the SparkleTech website, does happen to do a podcast that is one of my favorites, and I knew that show was going to come out well. At least I thought it would, so I was glad that people enjoyed that. With that, we're going to bring this episode to a close. If you have any comments, feel free also to go to amateurtraveler.com and leave them, or send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.